Hello, everyone, and welcome to Leaders in Elder Care, the interview series designed to share with you some of the many people who are changing the face of elder care as we know it. I'm Ryan Malone, founder of Inside Elder Care and host of the Leaders in Elder Care show. Before we start, I'd like to remind everyone to subscribe to this podcast, and you can do it in a couple ways. You can go to leadersineldercare.com, and up in the right-hand corner, there's a subscribe button. Or if you search by podcast on iTunes, you can find the Leaders in Elder Care iTunes show and subscribe there. Let's go ahead and get started. Joining us today is Michelle Nuzzo. Michelle is a certified life coach and certified retirement coach with a master's degree in clinical psychology from Pepperdine and also a bachelor's degree from UCLA. After her graduation from UCLA, she also attended secondary education at Cal State Northridge, clearly a California person, where she studied and learned the principles of curriculum design, educational psychology, and measuring behavioral objectives. How are you doing today, Michelle?
I'm doing great, Ryan. Thanks so much for letting me be on your call.
Well, we appreciate it. And from one California person to another, it's a beautiful day. We're only a few hours away. So, anyway, so let's hop right in. So you're a midlife transition coach. What is that?
For me, a midlife transitions coach means that I work with baby boomers who are transitioning any different number of ways, people who are transitioning from having a full-time career into a state of retirement, or perhaps people who have been retired and decide that it's not what they dreamed of or they need more income, and so they're transitioning back into some kind of working situation. It's also a huge time of transition for baby boomers who are dealing with all kinds of issues relevant to your population, which is caregiving issues. And so there's all kinds of changes that we go through.
Interesting. So why have you found it important, especially as it relates to elder care seniors and the families that care for them?
Well, for me, what I have found is that, particularly with respect to caring for somebody who's, let's say, a caregiver who's caring for a loved one, a coach can really provide objectivity and accountability. Each caregiver situation is certainly unique, but there are certain universal challenges that I think that we all experience. You know, and at one time or another, all family caregivers tend to feel stuck or overwhelmed, and we can get frustrated with our parents, with our siblings, and with the system. And so, you know, sometimes we're struggling to figure out how to communicate our concerns about our parents' health and talking to them about the ability to live independently and maybe talking to our siblings about holding up their share of the weight. And so it's real easy to go into a kind of a martyr mode. And it can be also, if you're working, really difficult to negotiate with your employers or with your coworkers about taking time off. And so I think in any of these situations, caregivers could really work with a coach to figure out not only a game plan, but also just sort of a way of taking care of their own self-care and having a stress management plan. So that, for me, is what I think has been most helpful to people.
So tell us a little bit, you know, it's interesting that, you know, I've now spoken to a few people in the coaching space, and it takes a certain type of person to be able to do this. Tell me, at least successfully, tell me a little bit about your background and what made you decide to become a life coach.
Well, for me, I'm really kind of a hybrid. I have both the professional background and also the life experience. As you mentioned, I do have a master's in clinical psych, and I'm a certified life coach. But when I was working towards my master's, I had co-facilitated some support groups for people with cancer and groups for caregivers. And earlier in my life, I had been a human resources person, and so I had counseled a lot of employees dealing with the stress that they had dealt with in their personal life and the way that it impacted their working career. Also, on a personal level, I've been doing caregiving for more than 15 years. My dad died more than 35 years ago from cancer, but in the most recent years, I've dealt with all kinds of family members who've gone through strokes, heart conditions, cancer, broken hips, just about everything you could imagine. It's like, you know, I've got frequent flyer miles in the ER. And so from my own experience, you know, I knew what it was like to be in the trenches and sort of feel a sense of caregiver burnout, and it seems like everybody in my kind of circle of friends are going through the same thing. And so what I wanted to do was really take a look at my own experiences and find a way that I could, from a cathartic standpoint, but also from a helpful standpoint, translate it into helping other people maybe have a little bit smoother sailing than I had.
Uh-huh. Interesting. The you know, it's funny. Whenever I meet people in this space, and I've said it 100 times, right? There's people that got into elder care because they saw that it was a growing market, and there's people that got into elder care because they had a personal issue that made them want to go out and help people and then secondarily make a living that they could take care of their family. And, you know, you and I are clearly on that side of the fence, but it's interesting to see the different personal experiences that drive people into this market. So, you know, playing along that personal experience theme, what do you think are the biggest problems that most caregivers face?
Well, I think that, you know, clearly every caregiver situation is really unique. You know, my experience is not going to be yours, but I think that we kind of all go through that same sense of, and certainly I don't presume to speak for other caregivers, but my kind of observation is, you know, at any given time, there's just this overwhelming sense of powerlessness. And it's, you know, if you're dealing with an aging parent or even an ill spouse or child, there are these feelings of vulnerability and unpredictability. It's like, you know, you feel like you don't have control over your own calendar. You know, it's the old saying, you make plans and God said ha, you know. And, and so sometimes there's a sense of waiting for the other shoe to drop or not knowing when the phone's going to ring. And I think also on the other side of that, you know, there's just so much information out there and there's so many decisions to make about navigating the healthcare system and dealing with insurance companies and long-term care or in-home care or, you know, whatever your situation, whether it be Alzheimer's or just somebody who's fractured their hip. So there's just this massive information, and there's, at least for me, if you're somebody who's also trying to juggle having your own career, there's this sense of how do I deal with all this information and what if I make the wrong choice and let everybody down? And sometimes it's really also easy to, as I said earlier, slip into sort of a martyr mode and say, you know, when do I get a life? You know, so those I think are some of the issues that people face. Just there's so much to know and feeling that, you know, how do I make the right choice? And also remembering that one of the things you need to do is take care of yourself.
Yeah, that's very true. It is very, especially when you have geographically separated caregivers.
That's
it's really
true.
Easy for people to sit back and feel more, you know, guilty, poor me, that they can't help.
Mm-hmm.
Almost to the point that it paralyzes them where they actually could help if they weren't feeling sorry for themselves so much.
Well, and there's also the flip side. There's the, let's say, the geographically close sibling who does everything and then thinks, you know, I'm, you know, I saw a book on your website, Designated Daughter, and I confess I haven't read it yet, but, you know, sometimes you feel like, tag, you're it. And, but then when the other sibling does get involved, then all of a sudden you're territorial. It's like, no, wait, this is my job. So there really are lots of issues, whether there's other siblings or not, to sort of work through and figure out how do you, you know, what's the priority now and how do you set those priorities and move forward and still have peace in the family.
Let me actually, that brings up an interesting topic that, so tell me if you, I read somewhere about a month ago that a lot of the sibling rivalries during caring for your parents come about because one of the siblings decides that, you know, maybe probably subconsciously, that this is a good opportunity to become the favorite again, maybe if
mm-hmm.
they weren't one. Do you
mm-hmm.
see that a lot?
I have seen that. And, you know, also sadly, what also happens sometimes at the other end of the spectrum is some people are just absolutely angels on earth and give every waking, breathing moment probably to their own detriment. And then in some cases with dementia, they become vilified. They're the ones that, you know, all of a sudden the parent thinks they're the devil. And so it's, you know, damned if you do and damned if you don't. But I have seen the situation that you describe. There's also some families are very, very, you know, hyper emotional. Others are quite logical and rational and work out. I've even seen references to contracts where they say, okay, if you're the sibling and you've given up your job and maybe your apartment and you've moved in with mom, you know, we'll figure out a way that you somehow can take a salary for this. So it's, you know, every situation is really, really different. And that's kind of one of the things that people need to know is what works for you may not work at all for me.
Interesting. So I've been following your site, Midlife Menu, for a while, and I subscribe to the newsletter. Explain to everybody what Midlife Menu is and how you came up with the name is the second question.
Sure. Well, first of all, thank you for subscribing to my newsletter. That makes me quite happy. The way that I came up with Midlife Menu, for me, it really has two kinds of meanings. I chose the name because baby boomers have just so much on our plates, and we're juggling, as you know, caring for our parents while we're still managing our own careers or trying to decide, you know, how to plan for our own retirement. So the first idea was sort of, you know, what's on the menu today? You know, is it caregiving? Is it career? Is it retirement planning? Or is it some kind of combo platter? And then secondly, when I designed my logo or I work with a graphics person to design it, what I wanted to show was sort of a menu of services that I offer, resources, tools, and support and coaching so that people who have midlife issues have a choice about, do I want to read a newsletter or take a class or do coaching? And so it was kind of both ends of the spectrum.
Interesting. So what is a typical coaching session like?
Well, a typical coaching session is, first of all, it's not therapy. A typical coaching session is one, it's usually less than an hour, it's slightly less than an hour, and typically it's done over the phone. And just for clients' convenience, I take Visa, credit card, MasterCard, PayPal. It can be with someone I've met, or quite often it's with someone that I've never met. And what happens in a coaching session, unlike therapy, which can be kind of an extended process sometimes, we're not so much interested in the past and the whys of how you got to where you are right now, but we're more interested in where do you want to go from here. So we'll normally have some set agenda for the respective coaching session, and the client will determine that agenda and decide what they want to take away from this one particular session. And then what happens is that as we talk and we explore whatever the issue is for that call, what I try to do is to listen on multiple levels and listen to things like language and energy levels and clues to what's really going on. And then what we will do is perhaps probe a little bit deeper and listen for maybe a shift and see, instead of somebody sitting there thinking about, I can't handle this, how, you know, it's just too much for me to handle, we'll try to reframe the language and say, okay, you know, how can you handle this? You know, what could you do to move forward? What are some support systems that you might have in place? And then I'll ask some powerful questions and invite the client to sort of shift his or her focus and think about taking the next step. So a lot of times it's very much about asking questions, having the client come up with the agenda and the goals and really solve their own problem. We co-create a situation where the client solves the problem. I don't come up with a prescription for them. And then there's some kind of accountability. We'll figure out, you know, what are you willing to do after this call?
And then I'm assuming in the subsequent sessions, you start with that measurement. And then do you do that? I mean, do you start with how you did on your previous session's plan?
Typically. I mean, it's not a report card. There's not, you know, it's not about making the person feel bad for not having accomplished it, but it's more looking at, this is where you said you wanted to go. This was a problem you wanted to resolve. And what steps have you taken? And, you know, what's stopping you from moving forward? You know, taking a look at what are maybe some of the barriers and having people look at what resources they have in their life, whether it's internet resources or personal resources that might help them move forward.
Got it. So So I got to ask you this. It seems like, you know, there's a growing number of people entering the coaching field, and, you know, there's a lot of kind of free services out there that you can read about or ask questions to. You know, I guess in general, how do you decide if you're a listener to the show, how do you decide, you know, who's a good coach and who's not a good coach? And then how do you decide whether or not paying for coaching services is worthwhile for you?
Well, first of all, I think that you can't decide who's a good coach and who's a bad coach. I think that probably what's more appropriate is who's a good fit for you.
Mm-hmm.
So really the easiest thing to do is, and quite often the most beneficial, is to book a complimentary session. Most coaches offer that. So you do sort of a getting acquainted kind of half hour or 20 minutes. And generally, in that kind of conversation, you can get a sense of whether there's some kind of compatibility there, because there really is a proliferation of coaches out there, and everybody has their own personal life experiences as well as their own educational underpinnings and background, and they have their own style. So some people may be much more direct. Other people may be very, very empathic and compassionate, and sometimes you need a little tough love. And so I think it's really a matter of finding what really works for you. And I think that really the best way to do it is to sort of try it on for size and see. You know, one of the things, obviously, if you're picking a coach, is you may know something about yourself already. You may know that if you're someone who's 40 or 50 or 60, that perhaps you're more comfortable with somebody in that age range. So It's knowing yourself and then seeing if there's a compatibility. That would be my sense.
I would assume gender probably is a good fit also. I know my mom is really comfortable speaking to my sister about different things than she would me.
For many people, that's true. And not always. You know, sometimes it's the inverse. And some people just, it's more a style issue. Some people like a more directive, you know, somebody who's going to have a really hold their nose to the grindstone, so to speak, in terms of staying on with a plan and setting goals and responding to timetables. And other people may be a little bit more intimidated by that. So I think that there's really a lot of really good people out there, and it's a matter of finding something that's going to feel like it's supportive of you and getting you where you want to go, because that's really what it's about. It's not about how happy are you in any given half hour. It's, is the coaching experience going to help you move forward, you know, and expand what's possible for you? That would be my sense, and other people may have, you know, a different opinion as well.
Got it. And so do you only offer individual coaching or?
No, I offer individual coaching. With respect to retirement, I offer I'm putting together a workshop for couples, and so I will offer individual coaching. Sometimes if there's enough people who are interested, we could do a group coaching around caregiving or retirement or midlife transition issues through like a teleseminar series. And sometimes we'll do things in person, like an in-person workshop. So those are all possibilities.
So going back to Midlife Menu, what can people expect to find when they go there?
The website, when you go to Midlife Menu, it's sort of a combo platter, as I said. The website talks about a number of the different services. It talks about coaching and career transition. There's a newsletter that people can subscribe to. It's an e-zine, and typically has a caregiver corner, a retirement column, and a empowered employment tip, and then some kind of feature article. There's a blog, and periodically, depending on the day, I will blog about any one of those issues. And people can also find out about, there's a caregiver resources page. If they go on the blog and then look to the left, they'll see a number of different links, and there's a link to the caregiver page and also to caregiving resources, which is sort of an introduction to some of the resources out there. I'm putting a lot more, I will be augmenting that and also putting a lot more of that together in some other information products that I'll be offering down the line.
Very cool. Yeah, I know I've been there a couple times. I get the newsletter. I enjoy reading the stuff that that you put out. I just personally enjoy it. It's a great way to kind of wind down the day. If people want to learn more about yourself or Midlife Menu, where do they go?
Well, the first place, obviously, they can go is to the website, and it's www.midlife, and there's no hyphen, so it's just MIDLIFE menu, MENU.com. And you can send me an email from there to info@midlifemenu, or you can call me at 310-422-8512 and leave a message, and I will be happy to get back with you and talk with you about perhaps setting up a complimentary session.
Very cool. Yeah, it's amazing, though, the impact that I've seen, like, in speaking to several coaches is just fantastic. And I typically try not to ask people too often about success stories, but can you share a success story with us?
Sure. I hesitated a little bit because coaches, just like therapists, are bound by confidentiality. I kind of have to hybridize a little bit and put together sort of a combination of things, but I can think of probably a couple of things. I can think of one woman who was a middle-aged woman who was taking care of her mother and being really the full-time caregiver for her mother, and she was just getting really run down in the process.
Mm-hmm.
And her mother had been bedridden for a really long time, and it was getting just this sort of an onerous task to get her mother to her medical appointments. And so we looked at sort of the idea of self-care and support systems and really having the daughter get to the point where she gave herself permission to get some help, to call for backup, you know, like they say on the police shows. And so she kind of got to that point, and then ultimately what she ended up doing was then we looked at some resources and helped her find some people that would actually accompany her to the medical appointment so she was not risking throwing her back out and dropping her mother and all the kinds of things that happen. You know, it can really be nightmarish if you don't admit that you need some help. So that's one thing that comes to mind. Another person that I'm thinking of is, when I talk about caregiving, for me it's really a continuum, you know, and it can be anything from taking somebody grocery shopping once a week to full-time living with somebody 24 hours a day. And it's real easy for it to become all-consuming and sometimes have our identities tied totally into the role. And so often I've heard people, whether it's clients or just people I know, when they've been in this kind of role and their parent or the person that they're caring for dies, I've heard them say, you know, I feel like I've been fired. And there's kind of the same kind of void that people feel when they've been laid off a job. There's, you know, there's sometimes a sense of being frozen. And so I worked with somebody who was in that kind of situation, and I'm not a grief counselor or a bereavement counselor, but we kind of worked through getting her past that point where even though her mother had passed on, she was still feeling like she needed her mother's permission to kind of to do things. And so we got through that, and then we kind of came up with just a real simple goal-setting set of strategies for some of the things that she wanted to do to move forward in terms of her home environment and her business and her finances. And just like any other business kind of coaching, we set some goal-setting and timetables and accountability and helped her move forward. And so it was kind of a nice transition from caregiving to moving on with life. And those are a couple things that I can think of.
That's cool. I love hearing those stories because I know even myself in providing care for mom, sometimes you just can't get past a certain stage of what you're doing, and a lot of times you need some outside help to do it.
Yeah.
And it feels really good when you get past it. Anyway, hey, Michelle, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate you being on the show today, and I wanted to thank you for being a leader in elder care. For our listeners out there, a reminder, be sure to check out two websites. The first is Inside Elder Care. It's a by families, for families approach to helping families with elder care issues. You can find it on the web at insideeldercare.com. and Portrait of Our Parents, which is a storytelling website designed to help you share memories of parents, grandparents, aunts, uncles, or any other older friend of the family that you have, because they're all defined by the memories that you have of them. That's reachable at portraitofourparents.com. Have a fantastic day. Thanks again, Michelle, and I hope
Brian,
you come back.
Thank, I want to chime in here for just a second. Thank you so much, not only for having me on the call, but for all of the tremendous work that you're doing on behalf of elder care, from your website, your book, all of the materials, your speaking, and getting together a group of people to support the movement and support people who are going through this experience, because you yourself are the Uber leader here. Just thank you so much.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. That's a fantastic way to end the call. I really do appreciate that. Again, everyone, thanks very much. Have a great day, and hope to see you soon.